OMG, we have a lot to do today. So we're going to get started promptly. If your name isn't on the sign-in sheet, print it today because if you registered after last night, I didn't reprint it this morning. But if you put your name on the sign-in sheet, then next week it will appear, and I will know that you were here today. If you don't have four sheets of paper and writing materials, the sheets of paper are available, yellow sheets of paper are available on the sign-in table. You're going to need four sheets of paper and a writing implement and a hard surface to write on. So make sure you have that now. Everybody ready for that? It's in the middle. Okay. Who is new to consciousness class? Raise your hand so we can see how many people are new. Who is new to consciousness? Who has never been in one of my classes before? Raise your hand. You made a big mistake, folks. I gotta tell you. We go through hell in here. We go through heaven in here, actually, is what we do. And we're certainly going to do it today. So first thing we generally do in class, or we always do in class, is some sort of meditation. And I'm going to lead you today through a very brief mindfulness meditation, because later in the day, toward the end of the session, we're going to go through a longer meditative experience. So we'll just do it briefly now. Oftentimes I let you meditate without guidance. Today I'll say a few words on what I would particularly like you to home in on. If, however, you want to do your own meditation in this time, you're absolutely welcome to do so. All right, so Thich Nhat Hanh says you want to sit like a mountain. However, you don't want to sit rigidly. You want to sit, as John Kabat-Zinn says, with dignity. That generally means having both feet on the floor, not one leg crossed over the other, and sitting upright. You can either have your eyes open or close them. Most of us like to close them because it's easier to not be overwhelmed by what we're seeing visually. But if you want to, you can have your eyes open, look down, or even look in front of you. So in this first five-minute sitting that we're going to do, your major focus is going to be on your breathing. Now, if you don't want to focus on your breathing, you can focus on sounds. It'll do just as well. Hearing keeps you here. But if possible, or if preferable, focus on your breathing and just relax around your breathing. Don't try to change your breathing, just notice it. Notice how much of your body, in fact, your whole body, is really involved in the breathing. The whole body sort of rises and opens, well, it does. Rise and open slightly with each in-breath, and then it falls and closes slightly with each out-breath. This is most noticeable in the torso region, that is, the belly and the chest, especially the belly, but the chest also rises and falls. And you just let that happen. You don't try to change your breathing. You're not doing anything. You're just noticing what is happening naturally. If the breathing, the breathing will adjust itself. It will tend to become slower and a little deeper. So So you just rest your awareness on your breathing. And whatever else you notice, you just notice it. You're not blocking anything out. You're not changing anything. You're just feeling the breathing. Soften and open around the breathing. So physically and mentally, let yourself soften and open. This is not something that you make happen, it's something that you let happen. Feel your face and your head softening. It's as though space is being created. So you're not compressed. You're increasingly without boundary, open completely in all directions. Your face and your head soften and open. Your neck and shoulders, arms and hands, soften and open. If you're holding any tension in your neck and shoulders, arms and hands, just let that tension dissolve away. You keep resting your attention on your breathing, and letting everything else soften and open. Your torso softens and opens. Your back, sides of your body, front of your torso, softening and opening. Even your internal organs soften and open. Your lower body softens and opens. Your pelvis, legs, and feet. If there's any tension in those areas, it releases itself. So your lower body softens and opens. You just rest your attention on your breathing and allow this process of spaciousness to happen. It's just an increasing spaciousness that you are. It's almost like you're hollow. And sounds and thoughts and feelings can come right through you, can come right through you. And you just let them move through you. You're just breathing and open awareness. If there are thoughts, they just happen. If there are feelings, they just happen. And you let them flow. But you don't get caught in them. They're just things that are moving through the spaciousness of your awareness. Don't resist anything or try to change anything. Just breathe, soften, and open. See, that was a teaser. You're going to get to do it more thoroughly in a little while, so I just kind of wanted to set it up. Also, really, you want to know the truth? You could all go home now. Everything else is just explication. It's just...
origination. It's just, you know, it's elaboration, it's qualification. It's, you know, if you did nothing but that, everything else would become clear and healed. I mean, that is really the bottom line. And every once in a while, you have to be reminded that whatever you're doing probably has both a benefit and a cost. The benefit is you're maybe changing something, fixing something, but the cost is you're narrowing in that process. And really, the classical Buddhist teaching is don't try to change anything. Just open to a larger perspective in which whatever it is that you're trying to change becomes less important. So it's kind of like the difficulties aren't solved, they kind of fall away, or they become less who you are. As Jung said, even Carl Jung said this. He said, well, not even Carl Jung, but Carl Jung said, and I've told you this, the difficulties that we face, we don't solve the important difficulties. We outgrow them. What was, in Jung's words, what was a great storm when we were in the valley, from the top of the mountain is still a storm. It's just very small and very below where you are. All right, but that's not what I was going to tell you. Okay. Okay, I got to tell you briefly what we're going to do this term, make a couple of announcements, and then we got to charge it up. Okay, today, today is audacious to say the least. We're kind of going to figure everything out and solve everything psychologically. It's all going to be the psychological theory of everything today, both in theory and in practice, just because I thought we'd get our feet wet and go over our head at the same time. Next week, Frontiers of Science. Specifically, we're going to look at a very important development in neuroscience right now, and current thinking about the nature of the universe from physics point of view. So next week, hard science. Not hard in the sense of not social science, but physical science. Not hard in the sense that we can't understand it. We'll be able to understand it. Okay. Then in 2 weeks, so that's the first 2 weeks. The third week and the fourth week, I'm going to interview two guests up here, and then you're going to interview them. So I'm going to sit them down and ask them a couple of trivial questions, and then you can ask them some non-trivial questions. The two guests, our first guest in 2 weeks, is Rabbi Eliyahu Gewirtz, who is an amazing guy, and who agreed 2 nights ago when I last talked to him to answer a few circumspect questions that I was going to pose to him. He was initially going to talk to you about something, but I said, you know, could I just sit you in the front of the room and ask you things like, do we have a soul? What happens to us after we die? Who's God? You know, a little stuff like that, and he just cracked up and he said, oh, God. So, yeah. So he's going to come and be interviewed by me and us in 2 weeks. And then in 3 weeks, which is our fourth class.
So there's two guys.
What? Yeah, there's going to be another guy after that. Okay. So the next week's heart is physical science, then Rabbi Eliyahu Gewirtz, and then the fourth week, Roshi Joseph Bobrow is going to come. Some of you may know his name. Joseph, it's amazing. Joseph Bobrow is this amazing Zen master who's done, he's also a psychoanalyst, he's done amazing stuff, worked with all the super famous people. Thich Nhat Hanh and Dalai Lama have commented on his books. He teaches all over the world, but he moved to Santa Barbara.
Wow.
And so he's going to come sit here, and I'm going to get to talk to somebody who really knows something. So that's what's going to happen this term. It's really dynamite. I can't believe it.
You got to come on the meditation class, too.
Oh, okay. So I'm going to come to that. Okay. So quickly, Adventures in Consciousness. Limited to 50 people. So if you want to be in it, sign up. That's Saturday, the 20th of February. What it is a deep
It's an active, you know, Jung's active imagination. It's an active imagination session. It's a guided imagery session. It's a trance. It's a trip. It's a journey into your unconscious. It's the H word, which I won't say. It's a self-hypnotic journey, okay? I'll tell you more about that later, but it's called Adventures in Consciousness. It's on the 20th of February. And because there'll be 50 of us all doing the same thing, it's an incredibly powerful space.
Is it part of Mind Supermind?
No, different. Okay. All right, Mind Supermind. On the 29th, Leap Day, 29th of February, Roger wanted this. Roger Yonka is going to talk to us about Qigong, which is what he is world famous for teaching. So he's somebody. So I'm sure Roger will be worth it. Mind Supermind will be worth it, okay? On the 29th of February. Two more things. Dave Humes is teaching three classes this term. The flyers are out on the table there. We arranged it so that after the four meetings of this class this term, Dave will teach two more times at this time on Fridays. So he's going to teach a Friday and a Saturday. It's the same thing. So if it's Friday, if you can make it this time, Saturday, if you can make it that time. So that's what wasn't clear from the schedule. And then he's also teaching a standalone class on January 30th. But the point is, if you were looking for something to do at this time, after our four sessions, Dave is going to have two sessions at this time. You have to sign up for them independently. And they're really interesting sounding sessions. So do look at those flyers.
We're going to teach on the next quarter.
Next, in the spring, I'm planning on teaching the first 5 weeks. I'll teach 5 weeks of consciousness class. And then I think that there's going to be somebody behind me at this time in this place. Okay.
Who could be behind you?
I'm not sure yet.
You're only going to teach five, right?
I choose to teach five. Okay. because somewhere in my schedule I'm trying to find a life. Okay, last thing. Carl. This is, many of you know this, is Carl Blasius. He's a class member and he teaches at CLL. He has a class that you may want to participate in. I think it's extremely interesting. Carl, tell us.
Yeah, I have a few of the flyers over there. This will be the fifth time or the sixth time I've taught a class on biology of aging. The sixth term, this is prospects for a longer, healthy life. I also teach a class on aging in the brain, which I will teach in the spring. And it's five sessions this time. And I've talked about a number of topics each time, including various diseases that are associated with aging and the current research on them, plus telomeres, youth hormones, both of which I gave brief introductions to this class in the past. Also, stem cells, nutrition, exercise, sleep, other things. This current term, two of the major topics will be have major practical implications for your life. And these will be the microbiome, the bacteria that colonize the surfaces of our body inside and out, and how it's related to our health, variations in our health through our life, and also eating patterns, the various kinds of fasting we can do that affect, can potentially help us maintain our health or overcome disease. And there's some very exciting research in both of these areas. And it's very accessible, and I'll be bringing it to you. And so there will be a couple other topics in this class, too. And I usually ask the class members for guidance and feedback for selecting them, because there's a plethora of topics and new information practically every week. It's the most dynamic field in science today. So I invite you to join the class. It meets on Thursday evenings this term at 6 to 8 over in the Wake Center. We have a classroom.
Thank you. This is Carl Blasius. Nobody better than Carl. Carl makes it clear, okay? And this is pretty dense stuff that Carl is our translator for this. And this really is the hottest area in science, I think. It's certainly amongst the hottest areas in science. You know, they say there are three revolutions. Infotech, which is already to a great extent happened, that is, everybody's walking around with a cell phone, we're all connected. Not that that isn't going to, we're still on the upswing of that wave, but the infotech revolution has already hit and changed the world. The next nanotech revolution really hasn't happened yet, but will. But the one that's happening right now is the biotech revolution. It is just so amazing what is being discovered about how life works and how it can work how we can heal it and help it work better. Okay, and Carl is talking about the leading edge of that. Okay, today, you don't really have to take notes about this because I actually have a sheet of paper that says this. You can if you want, but you don't have to. Also, on my website, drspencersherman.com, under writings, the second one down is called Getting Your Needs Met, and I read it again last night. I really liked it. I thought, God, who wrote that? That was really good. So if you want a little longer explication of this, or deeper explication of this, it's Getting Our Needs Met in the writings page of drspencersherman.com. Okay, so here's what that says, and here's what we're going to do. I'm going to talk to you about why you do what you do. What my premise is, or my assertion is, that underneath everything that you think, feel, and do, there's one basic motive. And that one basic motive is accomplished by getting four basic needs satisfied. So we're going to look at how well we satisfy those four basic needs so that that basic motive is satisfied. So what am I talking about? Okay. The universe did something remarkable about a few billion years ago. We're not sure exactly when, but the non-living universe, the material universe, somehow or other invented life. And that was a departure for the universe, because prior to that, things were just, you know, going by physical laws, and when a rock splintered, it splintered. It didn't make any, you know, it was just a kind of an inexorable movement toward entropic, complete entropic homogenization of the world. Things just kind of went, things just were running down. That's the nature of the physical world, right? But then this life thing happened, and suddenly things started becoming anti-entropic. They started organizing. They started getting more complicated. They started having a motive, the motive being to continue. The world, a rock doesn't care if it's sand or if it's a rock. A paramecium cares to stay a paramecium. Right? We care to stay alive. So the basic motive that came into the universe from the development of life is the survival motive. And further, because life hasn't figured out yet how to keep each of its representations alive forever, the procreation motive comes from the survival motive. So life, basically we're all one thing, life, which expresses itself in as many ways as possible in order to continue. And so each of us is part of this effort of life to stay alive in a universe which otherwise would... in which it would otherwise fade back into non-livingness. Okay. That makes sense, right? Yeah. Now, did life happen anywhere else but on this planet? We don't know that. There's more and more evidence. There's more and more hint that it probably did. But it may be, the possibilities are, that life happens all over the universe. It's just some At some point, the physical world gives birth to life. It may also be, on the other extreme, that the conditions for life are so narrow in the universe that only once on this planet did those organic molecules make a proto-RNA, which then made life, you know? Or it may be that at many points in the early history of the Earth, the conditions were right, so at many places and times, different uprisings of life or beginnings of life happened. We don't know that. That's an unsolved question. The point is, there is life. It's fundamentally different in a certain sense because it has a motive to persist and organize. It's different than the rest of the universe. So underneath everything, what we're doing is we are part of the life experiment, which is seeking to continue. In human beings, there are four basic motives that cause that continuation to happen. So there are four basic things that we need to do in order for our lives to continue and life to continue. So what are the four basic things? First, health and safety. We need to be physically well, and we need to be protected from things which would harm us. Say again?
No,
I have a thing that's gonna it's written down.
Oh, you're gonna pass them out.
Yeah, I'm gonna pass them out. So health and safety. So if we are not healthy, we are motivated to do anything necessary to get healthy. And if we are not safe, we're motivated to do what we need to do to become safe. That's pretty obvious. Second motive, pleasure. Oh, by the way, I'll tell you right now. Remember Maslow's hierarchy of needs?
Yep.
This is fairly parallel with Maslow's hierarchy of needs. The only thing that I add is Maslow didn't say pleasure. I think that's very interesting. However, this is exactly, what I'm telling you, is exactly the first four chakras in the Hindu chakra system, in exactly that order. Okay. So it's those of you who know that, that's what this is. Okay. So, secondly, pleasure. Why pleasure? Pleasure would seem like a trivial kind of thing, not like a basic need. Well, in nature, that which is pleasurable causes you to approach it. And that which is pleasurable in nature adds to your life. It tastes good. It feels good. It makes you more alive. In nature, that which is unpleasurable would take away from your life. So you approach or avoid based on pleasure or displeasure in nature. And animals do that very well. Human beings, however, have invented some pleasures that are not in the service of life. And those need to be modified by your gray matter so that you don't go toward them instead of away from them. But in nature, pleasure is sugar, drugs, stuff like that. We've invented stuff that fools the brain and that fools biology. But in nature, pleasure is a reliable indicator of that which would quicken life. So if a person is living an anhedonic life, a life of no pleasure, they're not doing what would make them more alive. They're, in fact, missing that which would make them more alive. Okay.
Where does gratification, in view of last quarter, is that part of your pleasure?
Gratification... Don't ask me that yet. Okay. But one way to look at gratification is it's the achievement of pleasure. Okay. Third of these four motives, and I'm introducing this theory so that then we can work with it. Third of the four motives is identity, autonomy, and ability, which are the self motives. That is, you need a strong sense of self. You need to know identity. You need to know who you are. Otherwise, you can't get what you need. If you don't know who you are, you don't know what's motivating you. Other people need to see you as an individual. Otherwise, they don't permit you to get your needs met. So you need identity. And that's a big one. A lot of us feel completely anonymous. Why do kids tag? Because I'm here. You know, I'm not just one of 7 billion people. I am somebody. You know, remember that what Jesse Jackson filled the L.A. Coliseum with people back in the 80s or 70s, people chanting, I am somebody, I am somebody. So identity is very important. Autonomy. We need to be free to choose the life course which gets our needs satisfied. If we don't have autonomy, if we are constrained to do what other people tell us to do, that may not be in the interest of getting our own life needs satisfied. So we need our autonomy. We need to have the freedom to choose. And we need ability. We need to be able to get what we need. That's why you go to school. All right, so the self needs, identity, autonomy, and ability are the third basic need. And the fourth basic need is connection.
Is what?
Connection.
Oh.
We haven't evolved to live alone. We are a band species. We've evolved to exist in extended family group. The basic motive of biology is not the survival of the individual, it's the survival of the group, we're coming to find out. So the point is, we can't be isolated. Being isolated is not healthy mentally or physically. The more connected we are, the more we thrive. Okay, so these are the four basic needs which grow out of the fundamental motive of life to stay alive. So let's now, with that little preamble, let's assess each of us how well we're getting these needs met. So I'm going to ask you four questions for each need. So you're going to need four sheets of paper.
Spencer,
yeah.
Just
no drawing. There's
no drawing.
Right. So I got to say two more things before we do this, okay? I knew there was something else. Theory isn't quite complete. Behind every failure to get a need met, there is a chronic closure. There is a chronic closure. That is, there's some sort of a blockage or not open, not being open. Sometimes we have the ability in life to both open and close. That's for a good reason. Sometimes we have to close in order to protect ourselves. Right? So if somebody... and we do this closing both mentally and physically. So if we're with somebody who is negative or abusive, we try to avoid them. That's a closure. Or we protect ourselves. We close ourselves down. We don't want to listen to them. That's okay to do. That protects us. But if we grew up in a family where there was a lot of negativity constantly, and we couldn't get away from it, then we develop a chronic closure. We just start to distrust other people and keep ourselves away from other people, and put up a wall. And the chronic closure will make us unable to make connection and therefore unable to thrive.
So closure, being able to close, go to sleep at night, right? That's a closure. In order to kind of reconstitute yourself, take a break from the world, that's a healthy thing. But if you don't get up, that's not healthy. Point is, you're supposed to be able to open and close. But when we don't get our needs met, what we find is there's a chronic closure behind that inability to get the need met. So therapy or growth has to do with opening, identifying and then opening chronic closures. The idea is to be able to open and close as the situation demands. When it's cold, you put on clothes, but you don't, you know, stay like that all the time. When it gets warm, you take off the clothes. So we're going to be looking at the openness or closeness in each of these areas. Okay? Secondly, let me figure out how to say it best. There are two ways that we can open a closure. We can either open a closure by changing how we look at something or by changing the thing itself. We can open a closure by changing our outlook, or we can open a closure by changing our actual circumstances. Mostly in psychology, we work with people on how to change their outlook. If they're looking at their life as completely hopeless and negative and impossible, then we work with them on saying different words to themselves, looking differently, so that they begin to see that there are possibilities in life. So we mostly work with the point of view, opening the way, the viewpoint, how we look at the world. However, sometimes what you need to do is change the actual life circumstances. So if a person says, I'm in a hopeless situation, you know, I can't do anything about it, you say, look, you could look at the world differently, you could look at it openness, and they're in a jail cell, you know, for with a life sentence, then maybe it's not going to be enough to say, you know, you cannot kind of open your mind. Maybe what we have to do is get you out of the jail cell. And unfortunately, we don't, because we're an individualist culture, amongst other things, we generally think that a human being has the freedom to create his or her own happiness or unhappiness. We underestimate the contribution of the life situation to the happiness or unhappiness picture. It's called a fundamental attribution error. Many of you have heard of it. That is, when we see somebody do something, we think it's because of who they are. We ignore the fact that they're in a situation which may be determining their behavior. So the point is that in our culture, we generally work with people about point of view. We are loath to say, you know, you really need to make a change. You need to get out of that relationship. You need to get out of that job. You need to get out of that city. But sometimes what's necessary is a transplantation, a real change in the life situation, not just a change in point of view. Okay, so one basic need, survival, four needs that come from that, which we either satisfy or don't satisfy. If we satisfy them, we are in well-being. If we don't satisfy them, we're not doing so well. If we're not doing so well, there are chronic closures involved. Open those closures, we either need to change our point of view or we need to change our life situation or both. So with that preamble, here we go. I'm going to ask you four questions about health and safety. By the way, forgive me for I've never talked about this before, so this is the first time, so this is not a smooth lecture. It's served, I hope. Okay. All right, so health and safety. Now, you're not going to get very long, since we're going to be, we have four needs, four questions per need. You're not going to be able to make a long explication here. This is going to be jot down what first comes to your mind, and later you can fill it in. Because we're going to need a minute or two for each of these things. So, first question about health and safety is, how well am I meeting this need? How well am I meeting this need? You don't even need to write the question down because I'm going to give you this sheet of paper, but if you want, you can write how well. And then as an answer, you can either give a percentage, or you can give you can rate yourself excellent, good, fair, poor, or you can give a little phrase, but just assess. How healthy are you? How safe are you? How secure do you feel? Health and safety, how well am I meeting this need? A minute or two to write down whatever comes to your mind. Okay, so that one's pretty, that's just a kind of an assessment. It won't take a lot of writing. Second one might take a little more writing. What are the areas of difficulty? What are the areas of difficulty? Again, you're focusing on your health and your feeling of being safe and secure. Where are the places where that's not okay? Okay, now, for physical health, it may be a little harder to see this than it will be for the next three needs. But the question is going to be, for each difficulty, is there a chronic closure involved? So before you go through it, let me just say a word or two. So you think to yourself, okay, I have, irregular heartbeat, tachycardia, or some bad rhythm. How does that have to do with a closure? Isn't that my heart beating too fast? What kind of closure is involved there? It's not like blood getting cut to the heart. What's going on? What does he mean by closure? So you have to think, okay, closure, what does that mean? Am I under a lot of stress? Does this tend to happen when I feel stressed? when I, is my blood pressure high? You know, is it because I feel very kind of pressured in my life? Well, yeah, kind of feel pressured in my life, and I'm under a lot of stress. And these incidents of tachycardia tend to happen when I feel like life is kind of pressing in on me. So there is a closure. It isn't directly, you know, it isn't a physical closure, but it's a psychological situation. It creates a feeling of constraint or closure or pressure. So for the physical things, I think you will find if you look one or two steps back that there is a closure driving a physical kind of thing. For example, let's say you have had some difficulty with cancer. What's the closure involved there? Well, the immune system in a healthy person will destroy precancerous cells so cancer doesn't develop. So if my immune system isn't working as well as it should be, why would that be? Well, the immune system is hooked to the amount of stress you have, how you look at the world. If you've been under a lot of stress or pressure, or if you felt very hopeless and depressed for a long period of time, that depresses the immune system, which then enables this illness to happen. So maybe the closure is in how I have been living my life, which has led in a series of steps to this physical outcome. So I hope that makes a little sense to you. Again, for this one, you might want to have to look more kind of several steps back to find out what the closure is that results in the particular thing, the particular difficulty you're looking at. Okay, so for each difficulty, see if you can identify a chronic closure. You may or may not be able to do it, but just for each one. We're on health and safety. I'm taking a long time on this one because it makes the other ones easier.
Can you say that one more time?
For each difficulty, you've written down the areas of difficulty about health and safety. For each difficulty, see if you can identify a chronic closure that has led to this difficulty. Understand? So, for example, if you don't have enough money, is there a chronic closure that has led to not enough money? Well, what might that be? What did you learn about money when you were little? How have you lived your life in terms of expecting that you will do okay? How successful have you been about being enterprising and getting money? So you may find that your financial difficulty at this point has to do with what you learned when you were young and the way that you have learned to be around money, which is that it doesn't come to me, or I'm not entitled to it, or I'm not enabled to get it. So there's some kind of closure around the free flow of finances. Does that make sense to people?
So it's what produced the closure, not what the closure causes. Is that what you're saying?
It's the closure itself. Identify the closure which has caused this difficulty. Then we'll look one step back. But identify the closure if you can.
What question?
What?
What's the question?
Health and safety.
For each difficulty that you're facing for health and safety, is there some kind of closure involved in it?
That's the question, right?
Yes, that's the question. And the closure can be physical or mental. I know this is hard, okay, especially for this one, but you have to, so this is a contemplation. You really have to think about this, and some of this might not come to you right now, but if we would, you know, if you work, there's always a closure involved at some level, which may lead. Okay, I'll say one more thing about this, and then we'll go back to this. Look, they say, you probably heard this. I probably told you this. They say that everything fundamentally is a spiritual question. And if you don't answer it right spiritually, it emotionalizes. And if you don't answer it right emotionally, it physicalizes. Okay? So the question is, for example, is the world, is the universe friendly, as Einstein said? You know, is the world, are we just in an uncaring billiard ball, dog-eat-dog world? If you believe, that's a spiritual question. You know, is there some basic goodness in the universe? If you don't believe that, that you haven't answered that question adequately spiritually, then you're going to get depressed and anxious. And if you're going to get depressed and anxious emotionally, and you don't deal with it emotionally, then you're going to get physical diseases that come from long-term depression and anxiety. So the basic closure is, the world is attacking me. Okay. And that brings the closures of anxiety and depression, which bring the physical closures. So this is a profound question I'm asking you to look at. So go back to this for a little bit more, okay?
Is another way to put it, is there some way I might be causing the difficulty I'm having?
Oh, yes, that's another way to put it, and ties to the next question, which we'll get to. But yeah, and If it isn't random, if things make sense at some level, okay, then the question is, are you making sense of what is not okay? And you're making sense of it in terms of a closure at some level. So keep going. Abraham.
When you move into the spiritual part of you and become like a spiritual entity, don't these needs fall apart? Like all you need is love?
Yes and no. You need the basic understanding spiritually, but you also need the strategies for how to translate that. We got to continue.
I wanted to just clarify closure a little bit. For me, I'm creating closure consciously to be out of balance, but it's for what I see as a greater good, a greater project that I'm working on. Is that closure, or am I fooling myself? Because I say I'm deciding to be out of balance, and I have been for a while. And but that's caused a lot of problems. That's caused some issues. So is that a closure?
Yeah, it's a closure.
Okay. But I wanted to do it. I'm still
doing
it.
Yeah, but the question would be, could you have stayed in balance and still do that? Mm. Okay. Because there is some closure and some difficulty. Okay, again, you're probably going to look at this more deeply, okay? Because I'm asking you profound questions here. So I'm going to ask you another profound question, and it'll be easier for the other three. It's hardest for the physical. For the other three, it'll be a lot easier. Somebody's. Okay, so the fourth question is, by changing my... Oh, Let me give you one more illustration of how this works. When I was growing up, I heard about the Depression, okay, and how bad the Depression was, and how you got to hold on to your money, and it all could go away, and all that kind of stuff. And I look at other people, friends of mine, who are entrepreneurs, and they try outrageous stuff. They invest all their money in stupid schemes, which pay off, and they don't even think. Oh my God, you could be out on the street. You could have nothing. Because they didn't grow up with that pervasive mindset. But I think, hold on to every dollar. No, don't try, you know. So when I look at why I'm not rich and famous, you know, I think, is this random? Or is it that I don't have the right stuff? Or is it that there's some basic attitude, some basic closure around financial success that I absorb and that I still operate under? Understand? So you have to kind of look deep in yourself. What's the basic closure here that is many steps down the line or several steps down the line causing a physical problem or a safety problem? Okay, last question here is, by changing my life circumstances or my view of my life, how could I open these closures? So if you listed the closures, by changing my life circumstances or by changing my view of my life in this way, how could I open each of these closures? All right, let's, again, this is for your contemplation. This is a completely non-trivial, actually, and over, this is not a small exercise, so we're starting it now. Second meeting. The need for pleasure. This one will go more easily, I think. There are four needs. This is the second of the four needs. I'm going to ask you four questions, and we'll be able to go through it more easily. First question, how well am I meeting this need, the need for pleasure in my life? How well am I meeting this need? Yeah, it could be a percentage, or it could be pretty good, great, not good, or it could be a phrase. What?
Enumerate.
pleasure?
We're getting there. We're getting there. For now, you're just kind of assessing how much pleasure do I have in life. Okay, second question. What are the areas of difficulty? What are the areas where I'm not getting pleasure and I should be getting pleasure? What pleasures are part of life that should be part of my life that aren't there? Or where am I not taking pleasure where I should? Okay. Areas of difficulty. Third question. For each of these areas of difficulty, is there a chronic closure involved? And fourth question, by changing my life circumstances or changing my view, how I look at things, how could I open each of these closures? Not that you're going to, how could you? Okay, you're not obligating yourself to. By changing your life circumstances or by changing how you look at things, how could you open each of the closures that you just identified? That make sense? Okay, third one. What do you want to do? Third of the needs, which is identity, autonomy, ability, the self needs, strong self needs. So, first question is, how well am I satisfying the need to be who I am, to act in ways which fulfill me, and get what I need? So how healthy is my sense of self? How well do I know myself? How well do I live in accordance with who I really am? And how well do I accomplish my goals? Okay, second question. What are the areas of difficulty with regard to my sense of self? The third question. For each difficulty, is there a chronic closure that you can identify that is involved? So each difficulty, is there a closure? Okay, and fourth question. By changing my life circumstances or my view of my life, how could I open, theoretically anyway, how could I open each closure? Okay, it all seems so easy on paper. Anyway, fourth basic need, connection. Consider what you're doing, the beginning scribblings of a much deeper process, okay? But at least we're kind of getting our toes wet, okay? So, connection. Four questions. First question, how well am I doing about feeling not isolated, feeling connected to other people in significant, even intimate ways? How good is my connection level versus my isolation? Second question, what are the areas of difficulty with regard to connection? What are the areas of difficulty? Third question, is there a chronic closure involved in each area of difficulty? Is there a chronic closure involved in each area of difficulty? Fourth question. By changing my life circumstances or my view of my life, how could I open whatever closure or closures I wrote down? By changing my view or my circumstances, how could I open the closures? Okay, now we're going to change tracks. By the way, I wouldn't show this to anybody that you're not very close to. That was a rather demanding and maybe too abstruse intellectual exercise, but hopefully it brought up a lot of stuff. Now let's have an experience which has to do with well-being and healing. Okay? So, let go of thinking about all that stuff. You can come back to what you made notes on, and I'm going to give you a sheet of paper about it. Okay? Let's do something that we can use right now to feel better, and also that you can do briefly at any point when you experience difficulty mentally or physically. This is something that you can do for a minute or two whenever it seems indicated, and it's not difficult. So here we go. Sit upright, but not rigidly. Best have both feet on the floor. Close your eyes or look down. Let yourself come to right at this moment. Whatever would just happened, let it go. Whatever's going to happen, don't anticipate. Just feel your breathing. And let yourself soften and open around your breathing. Be just resting attention on the movement of your abdomen, and in fact, your whole body as you breathe. There's an opening and a closing, just slightly. A rising and a falling, just slightly, with each breath. The breathing is rhythmic and gentle. And by focusing on it, you're able to release any tension that you feel. You just feel yourself physically softening and opening. And you feel yourself mentally and emotionally softening and opening. So you just rest your attention on your breathing and allow the process of creating space to take place. Let your face and your head soften and open. If you're holding an expression on your face, let it melt. Let it dissolve away. So your eyes are softly, gently closed. If there's any tension in your mouth or jaw area, it can soften and release itself. It's almost as though your face is disappearing. It becomes so soft and open. Similarly, the sides and back and top of your head, softening, opening. It's almost as though your head isn't even there anymore. And there's just intelligence and spaciousness. You can feel your breathing just happening naturally. Let your neck and shoulders, arms and hands soften and open. If there's any tension that you're feeling in your neck and shoulders, arms and hands, let it melt away. So that your neck and shoulders, arms and hands feel open and spacious. It's almost like they're not even there. And there's just spaciousness where there used to be solidity. And you can feel your breathing just happening naturally, easily, softly, gently. Let your torso soften and open. If there's any tension in your back, sides, or front of your body, or in your internal organs, let that tension release itself. So that space is created. Your torso softens and opens. It's almost as though it disappears and there's just openness, spaciousness, where there used to be a solid torso. And you can feel your breathing happening easily, naturally, gently. Let your lower body soften and open. Lower back, pelvis, legs and feet. Softening, opening. Any tension releases itself. It's almost as though your lower body disappears. It becomes so soft and open. It's almost like it's not even there. And there's just spaciousness where there used to be a solid lower body. And you can feel your breathing happening easily, naturally, gently. It's as though you're simply breathing and open awareness. Just spaciousness, intelligence, and the gentle breathing. Allow or imagine, either feel or imagine, it doesn't matter which, wellness, wholeness, well-being. Feel or imagine well-being throughout your entire being. So where your body used to be, now there is a feeling of vitality, of well-being. And you just allow that feeling to arise and to do its healing work. So your spacious, open body and mind are filled with vitality and wellness, the feeling of well-being. And you just allow this feeling to fill you. To suffuse the open space that you are. You just let this feeling arise in you and build in you. You either feel it or imagine it. Again, it doesn't matter at all. Where formerly you had a solid body and a dense mind and a troubled heart, perhaps, now you have complete openness that is filled, that is suffused, that is enlivened and enlightened by wellness, by well-being. And you just allow this feeling of well-being to exist in your entire being, mind, heart, and body. Just well in this moment. When you are ready, bring your attention back to your breathing. Feel vitality filling the body that you are now reconstituting. Feel yourself still filled with wellness, but now in a discrete body with boundaries. Filled with vitality, wellness. And then when you're ready, you can open your eyes. Now, does what we just did have any effect? Well, it certainly has an effect in the moment. Because in the moment, you feel better. But it also turns out, as you know, that mentally, therapy works because you think it works. Basically, mental things are amenable to mental changes. Okay, so it certainly works mentally and emotionally. Does it work physically? Turns out that the immune system is, of all the body systems, the most tied into your mental and emotional functioning. And by doing a little of this, you make a dramatic difference, it turns out by research, in how your immune system functions. So when you're not okay, here, or in body, I would suggest just sitting down and for a minute or two, creating space and feeling or imagining, if you can't feel it, it doesn't matter, imagining well-being in your whole being.
It can't hurt, and I think you will find that it really helps. And what we just did, by the way, is we took whatever closures we were experiencing at that moment, right? And we opened them up. I think spaciousness is the most powerful metaphor for well-being. So whatever you got out of that ridiculous exercise that we did, I hope that it is food for contemplation. I think the theory is true. Okay? The question is how it translates into your life and how you can use the understanding of your basic needs. Okay, so have a great week. I'll see you next week. What? Oh, thank you. Wait.